We're holding on Lamed Umud Beis, seven lines from the end of the middle size lines. The line begins Shenamar. We started talking about yesterday about the various things kol mitzvos haben al av, which means all the mitzvos that a father has to accomplish for his son, and we listed there are five things, and according to Yesh Omrim six, yes, to we said the father has to mal his son, do a pinyan haben, teach him Torah, marry him off, and teach him a trade, and Yesh Omrim also to teach him to swim. So we went through the first few of them already. How we know that a father has a field to mal him and do a pinyan haben and teach him Torah, how we know in each of those cases the mother is pater, and we were in the and we went through some agadta about the importance of learning Torah and how it protects a person from the Yetzer Hara and so on and so forth. So now the Gemara continues, seven lines from the end of the middle size lines on Lamed Amud Beis. Lasiyah Isha, the next thing is we said a father has to marry off his son. Menolon, so where do we know that from? Dichtiv, you have a pasuk. The context of this pasuk is that Yirmiyah is sending a letter to the Jews who are already in Babel. This is after Golus Yechoniah, so 11 years before Churban Bayis Rishon. You have the Chorash v'Hamaskeh, the great Talmud Chachamim, have been taken in Golus in Babel. And Yirmiyah, who writes them a letter, he says, you have people over there, you have false Nevi'im, who are telling you, don't worry, you're not going to be there very long, you're soon returning to Eretz Yisrael. It's not so, you're going to be in Bavel for a while, Golus Bavel is going to last 70 years. So he tells them, settle in over there. And among other things, he tells them, Kuhnashim, marry wives, and produce sons and daughters, take wives for your sons, and your daughters you should give in marriage to men. So in other words, settle in there and then get ready, you're going to be there long term. The point is, in other words, that Yirmiyahu is telling them that they have a responsibility to see to it that their sons and daughters get married. So the Gemara asks, Vishlema b'noi, I understand how it works with his son, b'yodei, it's in his hand to accomplish that, because the man who usually looks for a wife to marry, Ella b'yodehi. But when it comes to a daughter, is it really in his hand? It's usually the man who looks for the woman, not the other way around. So how is it? How can we tell the father you have to marry off your daughter? This Gemara is also in Ksuvah. Rashi over there explains it that way, and Tosfos explains that the question is really. So in a similar vein, in other words, that usually a man, it's easier for a man to find a woman that he wants to marry rather than the other way around. So what do we mean so what does Yirmiyah mean when he's telling the parents, see to it that your daughters get married? So the answer is Hachikamalahu. He means to say, Nitin Lamidi, the father should be giving her something. The Lavshiyeh ben Achastia, you should be giving her money or other resources with which she can get food, with which she can get clothing and coverings. Lavush is regular clothing. Achastia to cover her would be like outer wear, like coats or whatever. So she's dressed nicely. That way, people are more likely to be attracted to her and to make shidduchim with her. So it's true. Ultimately, it'll be up to the chassan to come and find her, but the father at least can do his part to make it more likely that people will pay attention to her. And for that reason, we learned in Ksuvos that you have the concept of parnasa. We have the concept that the chachamim earmarked a certain part of the Yerusha in particular. If the father passes away, the Chacham earmarked a certain percentage of it that should go to Parnassah, that should go to exactly that, outfitting his daughters and preparing them and preparing for a Nadan and everything that they're going to need for marriage. Here, by the way, the Gemara doesn't ask the question how we know that the mother is potter from this, and the same thing it doesn't with the rest of them. The Ran talks about, but after all, when you get down to it, we know that women themselves don't have a chiyuv to get married. The concept, the mitzvah to get married is primarily on the man because of pruvu, and women aren't commanded in pruvu. Therefore, the Gemara knows already if the mother herself is not chayev in it, then there's no reason to assume that she'd be chayev in it for her children. Okay. The next one was the lambda umnus. The next one was that a father is responsible to teach his son a way of making a living. So Manolon, where do we know that from? Omachiskia, de omakra, you have a pasuk, re'echayim im isha asher ahavda. See life with the wife that you live. So the chayim over here refers to something that he can live off of, a craft, something that he can do for a living. So why does it mention im isha asher ahavda, with the wife that you love? So it depends. We can look at the word isha as two possibilities. Im isha mamashi, if it means an actual wife, then the point is that the pasuk is making an equation, is making a hekesh between them. Im isha mamashi, kashem shechayev lahasiya isha, then just as we established based on the pasuk in Yirmiyah that the father has to marry off his son, kachayev lalamde umnus, the same way he would be responsible to teach him a craft. So the point would be, again, re'echayim, see a life, see, in other words, that you're that you should have an umnus, that you should have some kind of craft that you can do, im isha, together with the wife that you love, which means, in other words, exactly that. So you have the father has a chiyuv to marry off his son and also to make sure that he has an umnus. The im torahi, if you're going to say that the isha over here is a remez on Torah, as we find, for example, that the, among other things, Esh Chayil is a remez on Torah. Well, then we would say Kishem Shechayv Alamde Torah Kachayv Alamde Umnus. And the point of the comparison would be just like the father has to teach his son Torah, as we established before from Mishinantam Levanecha and the various other psukim that we bought. The same way he has to teach him an Umnus.
Why does the Mishnah put? The marriage before the umdus, it's not very logical. It should be the other way around. How can someone get married without umdus?
It's a good point. The truth is, the Me'iri talks about over here on the Gemara. He says maybe the father is not necessarily required to teach him umdus unless he hasn't taught him Torah. He learns. Now, you know, we're going to have at the end of the Masechta, we're going to have the expression of Reb Nahoroi that never mind all the umnius in the world, I'll teach my son Torah, and that will and he'll live, and that will be what he really needs in order to live. So the Me'iri takes that up and says,
one second,
let me finish the sentence. The point is, in other words, it comes out from that it's one or the other, Torah or umnus. So therefore, maybe it puts umnus last because that's only like if he hasn't learned Torah, then not. Other than that, I guess you could say first we're dealing with the ones that, for example, the one from the getting married, we learn from a pasuk in Nevi'im, the umnus we learn from a pasuk in Ksuvim. That might be a reason to put them in that order. It's true. It is true. We learned in Sota that a person should have a bias and a kerem and then only then get married. Yeah.
Right. But if it was either Torah or umnus, then it would just name Torah. It would be obvious that if it's not Torah,
no,
it would be umnus.
Not everybody is cut out to learn Torah on that high level. We'll talk about at the end of the Masechta, that's the Shem. We'll talk about what Reb Nahoroi says. We'll talk about what the other things that it says in the Mishnah over there. We'll get to it when we finish the Masechta, that's the Shem, about what the deal is. I mean, we do, after all, have, on the other hand, it says in Pirkei Avos, Yofer Talmud Torah in Derech Eretz. So there's a lot about that, about the interplay between learning Torah and having a job, having a craft, and to what extent you need one and to what extent you need the other, and then to what extent you need both. Most people need both, after all. But yeah, the reason why it puts them in this order, I guess for Pashtos, maybe one answer could be because of where we learn them from, respectively. Maybe it's going through in the first, the ones that we learned from Chumash, which were to mal him, to do a pidyon haben, and to teach him Torah, then the one from Nevi'im, La'asiya Isha, and then the one from Ksuvim, which is L'lam Le'umnus. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then the Braisa said, "V'yesh omim afla hashite b'nahar." Some say the father also has to teach the son how to swim. So my time a chayusehu, because that's also part of his chayus, because the son's life may depend on that. If he's going on a boat or whatever, and it sinks, then he needs to know how to be able to save himself. Okay. Then we had the end of the Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Hordad said, anybody who doesn't teach his son a craft is teaching him robbery. And the Gemara asks, like it had asked when we first quoted the Braisa, listus sakadai, what do you mean robbery? The fact is he hasn't taught him robbery. Ela ki'ilu melamde listus means as if he's teaching him robbery. Because as we said, in other words, like this, if he doesn't have any kind, if he doesn't have a gainful employment, how is he going to earn a living? So he's going to figure that he has no choice but to go and steal and rob. Now, what is Rabbi Yehuda adding to the Tanakhama? It's a nice vote of Rabbi Yehuda's, but he doesn't need to say that unless he has a point that he wants to make that he feels the Tanakhama left out or that he disagrees with. So my Benayu, the Gemara says, what's the practical difference between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama? And the answer is Ikka Benayu de Agmara Iska. The nafkamina would be, what if the father teaches the son to do business, to buy and sell for a living? Well, according to Tanakhama, good. He taught him a way that he can earn a living, so that's good enough. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda is saying not. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, Kol sheinu melamde umnus melamde listus. So Rabbi Yehuda is insisting that he has to teach him umnus. So Rashi explains, because what if a person, so an umun, a craftsman, is always going to be able to find what to do. As long as the raw materials are available, and they nearly always are, then he'll be able to continue earning a living. A socher, on the other hand, depends on there being schoda available. So what if there's no schoda? What if there's no merchandise available, and he still needs to support his family and pay his bills? Then he might feel that he has no choice but to engage in listus. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, it's not enough, like you, Tanakhama, say, teach him to run a business. You have to teach him an umnus, something which no matter what he'll be able to keep on doing. Tosfos Riya Zokin makes
question.
One second. Tosfos Riya Zokin makes a different point, which is with schora there are ups and downs. Sometimes you gain sometimes you gain money, sometimes you lose it. So again, if a person is doing schora, he may end up losing a considerable amount of money from it, and then decide that he needs listus. Whereas if he's an umun, it's not going to be that way. Yeah, what's the question?
The question is this. If you don't teach Torah, the Mishnah says, if you don't teach Umnus, you're going to have listim.
Right.
Torah, you don't... Right. Kava Chomer for Torah. If you don't teach Torah, you're also going to have listim. So much more, actually.
Right.
Why
so
the Mishnah
keep,
does...
Well, keep in mind...
Why the Mishnah
said
doesn't mention
was,
both?
Okay, so keep in mind, what we learned yesterday is... that we said the minimum amount the father has to teach his son, in other words, to hire a melamed and so forth, is to teach him mikra. Now, a person, and we find in many gemaras, a person can't live a full life of Torah on the basis of only mikra. Ultimately, he's going to have to learn Mishnah and Talmud as well in order to know fully what it means to be a yid and what it meant and what exactly the halacha is. So maybe therefore Rabbi Yehuda is not focusing on that, because you can't very well say if you don't teach him Torah, you're teaching him listus. The fact is, even if you do teach him Torah, you're teaching him maybe only the bare minimum of mikra, and that's not really enough anyway. The son is eventually going to have to learn it on his own, or unless the father can find somebody to teach the son for free or whatever. But to that extent, he doesn't have a chiyuv. But here, when it comes to umnos, we're saying that you can have when it comes to umnos, you can be a beginner, you can be an expert or whatever, one way or the other you can make a living from umnos. But if you don't have it, only if you don't have it at all, then melamde listus.
But still, you see a lot of umnim who are crooks and listing. You need to run.
You have a lot of umnim who what?
You have a lot of umnim who are listing. They're crooks. They simply don't.
Well, I mean, there's a limit how much, you know. We're not saying that if you do all these things, your kid is guaranteed not to be a crook. There's still obviously you have to teach him midas tovus and all. That's what we said yesterday. Ad yodach al tzavri b'dibreich. While you still have him under your control, you have to teach him. You have to teach him musar and midas tovus. You hope, you know, you work as much as possible that it'll take, and your son will be an Erel Chayid. What we're talking about over here is more that a person might we're not talking about over here so much maliciously as a person might figure, look, I've got a family to support, I've got no money, what else am I going to do other than listus? So therefore we're saying proactively teach him an umnus so that he doesn't feel that he needs to be reduced to that. if he has an umnus and nevertheless he decides to cheat, there's only so much you can do about that. He is his own person, after all. You have to give him a chinuch. You hope chinuch l'nar apidarkei, but we can't, if he does engage in listos, obviously it's going to reflect badly on his parents, but we're not getting into that level of detail, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's that. So that covers all the things we said in the Braisa that the son, that the father has to do for the son. So now the Mishnah, now going back to the Mishnah had said, kol mitzvah sa'av ala ben, that on the other hand, all the mitzvahs of the father on the son. So we said both men and women are chayiv in there. So my kol mitzvah sa'av ala ben, what does that expression mean? Does it mean all the mitzvahs that the father is responsible to do for his son? For example, to mal him and do pidyon aben and so forth. So what do you mean? Noshim chayavus. What do you mean? Women are chayav. For Hatanya, didn't we learn in the Braisa before? Ha'av chayav b'no l'mulo v'lefdosei. The father is responsible to mal and to do pidyon aben and so forth. Aviv ein imoy loy. Only the father, not the mother. Rishonim explained the Ritva that we had the opposite question when we first started the Gemara. What does kol mitzvah saben ala av mean? And the Gemara thought the other way around. Maybe it means kibud av v'aim, and it concluded that no, it meant the mitzvahs that are listed in that braisa. So now the Gemara is doing it the other way around. The point is, in the Beis Medrash, when they first learned this Mishnah, they asked about both parts. What is kol mitzvah saben ala av, and what is kol mitzvah saav ala ben, back to back, where the question was, does maybe kol mitzvah saav ala ben mean... Does kol mitzvah ha-ben ala-av means the ones that the son has to do for the father, kibud and murder, and kol mitzvah ha-ben ala-av ala-ben would be the other way around, the ones the father has to do for the son. And we concluded that no, it means the other way around. The first part of the Mishnah is talking about what the father has to do for the son. The second one is what the son has to do for the father. And then when Ravina and Ravashi composed the Gemara, they put each piece where it belongs, where it's dealing with that part of the Mishnah. Anyway, so therefore, so Omer of Yehuda Amar Rav, Hochi Kamar, what the Mishnah means is, kol mitzvah sa'av hamutela sala ben lasis la'ovim, all the mitzvahs regarding the father, where the son is obligated to do for his father, kibud avraim and murder avraim, echad anoshim ve'echad noshim chayovin, both men and women are chayiv in those mitzvahs. Which, therefore, tanena loha the tanen abanan. So thereby, in the Mishnah, we've said briefly what it says in more detail in a braisa, which again means that braisa is a libur dehilchse, it is accepted by halacha. That, now you have the pasuk that says, ish imoy v'oviv tiro. So the braisa daush in the pasuk, when it says, ish, a man should fear his father and mother, ainli ela ish, so you would think that means only a man, maybe a woman is potter from that mitzvah, ish aminayin, how do we know a woman is chayav? When the pasuk continues, you plural should fear, hare kan shnayim, then that means two. Otherwise, it would have said ish imi v'aviv yira or tira or something like that. So therefore, it's addressed to both men and women. Im kain matamid loymar matamid lomi ish. Well, then why does it say ish in the first place, which would mislead us into thinking that only men are chayev? So the reason is because ish sipik v'yade lasis, because the man is always capable of doing it. He's even whether he's married, whether he's not married, he can always do kibud and murder. So therefore, so it starts with ish. Isha in sipik v'yade lasis, but a woman is not always, doesn't always have the means of doing kibud and murder. Because the reshus of others, of her husband, is on her. She's responsible to, she has responsibilities towards her husband. Her husband kind of, she's meshubad to her husband. Tosfos says, we don't mean necessarily the fact, for example, that maisi yadeha, that her earnings go to her husband. That is true, but that's only dirabanan, and here we're talking about a daraisa level already. So rather, what it means is, practically speaking, she's living with her husband, she's not necessarily around her parents, so she's not always capable of doing kibud and murder for them. So that's why the pasuk starts with the word ish to imply the man. It's unconditional, but the wife not necessarily. A couple of achronim deal with the interesting question. I mean, kibud is one thing. Kibud, we're going to learn later on, includes, for example, providing them with food and clothing and serving them and whatever. Fine, she's not always around to do that. Murder, though, for example, is, let's say, not sitting in their place, not calling them by their first name, not contradicting them or whatever. Why shouldn't a married woman be able to do that just as well as a single woman? How is Rishus Acherim Aleha a contradiction to that? So there's a couple of answers. The Maharal gives a couple of answers. He says, for one thing, suppose the father, suppose the parent directly asks the child, do something for me. If the child doesn't do that, that's not only a violation of kibbutz, but also of murder because they've disobeyed their parents. Well, again, the wife may not be able to do that because her husband comes first. Sure. He says another point also, which the Ma'ari Bei Rav says this point as well, which is one of the things of murder is not to contradict them. Well, again, with a married woman, if her husband says one thing and her father says something else, then her husband comes first. So therefore, she may not have the ability, the full ability to do murder in that case. With that said, though, you know, the Shach says if the on Shulchan Aruch, if the husband doesn't object, then yeah, then of course she has the chiyuv of kibbutz and murder. And in fact, you know, if the husband is a decent guy, then he'll arrange things in a way that there won't be a conflict like that. So the Gemara continues. Nisgausha shneim shavim. Once the woman is divorced, then they're back to both being equal, and she has an equal chiyuv of kibbutz avraham as a man. The chiddush being, in other words, the ritva says you shouldn't think once she was potter in the first place, then she remains potter forever. No, it's only that she was potter temporarily because there was something that, not temporarily, we hope her marriage lasts l'orech yamim, but the point is she was potter at the time because of circumstances, but that doesn't potter her completely. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to get into a discussion about kibbutz and murder, about these two mitzvahs. Tana Rabbanan, the pasuk says, Nemar kabed es avicha v'asimecha. The pasuk says, honor your father and your mother. V'nemar, and you have a pasuk in Mishlei, kabed es Hashem mehoincha. Honor Hashem from your wealth. So it uses the same word kabed for both of them. Therefore, we learn from that. Hishra kosev, kibbutz avraham, l'kvod hamakim. Therefore, we see that the Torah is comparing kibbutz avraham to honoring Hashem. So honoring parents is as important as honoring Hashem. Similarly, ne'emar ish imoy v'oviv tirohu, it says you should fear your father and mother. V'ne'emar es Hashem alakecha tiro v'osei savod. You have the expression in the pasuk that you should fear Hashem and serve Hashem. So again, Hishva Kosev, Modas Avraim, L'Modas Hamakim. So the Pasuk is also comparing the fear, the awe that a person should have for his parents to the fear and awe that he should have for Hashem. And another example, Nemar, so those are on the positive sides. On the other hand, Nemar Makalu of the Imay Mos Yomos, the Pasuk says that if a man curses his parents, then he's put to death. And v'nema ish ish ki yikalo l'kav v'nosas cheter. It says the same thing. If a person curses Hashem, then he bears his guilt, and he's also chayav misa. So we see also hishvakos of birkas avraim v'birkas amokim. So we see also the Torah is equating cursing. More use the word blessing as a euphemism, of course. Blessing meaning really cursing his parents to doing the same thing to Hashem. Now, on the other hand, you also have the Torah says, Make over the Imay Mosi Yomos, that if a man hits his father or mother and wounds them, then he's Chayiv Misa. There, it's impossible to make that equation because, of course, he can't hit Hashem. What's the point of mentioning that? Wouldn't that be fairly obvious? Hamakne says, the point the Gemara wants to make with that is you might wonder, how come it is? The fact is, when a person curses his parents, the Misa he gets is Skila. On the other hand, if he hits them and wounds them, the misa is chen, which is much more lenient. Why is that? He says that's what the Gemara is stressing over here. Because by klala, it's possible to do the same thing to Hashem, and that would make a person chayv skila, therefore the Torah upgrades his misa to skila if he does it to his parents. On the other hand, since hakar is impossible with Hashem anyway, so therefore it's left at kind of the default, which is chen. And the Gemara says, "V'chein b'din." In fact, it's logical. It's only right that it should be so that the kavod and murder and so forth for parents should be equal to that of Hashem. Because after all three of them, the father and mother and Hashem are all partners in creating the baby. Rashi brings from the Gemara in Nida the specifics. What does the father contribute toward the baby? What does the mother contribute? What does Hashem contribute? So it's only right, therefore, that the kavod of all of them should be. So the Gemara continues on that vein. Tonan Abanan, Shloisha Shutfin Hein Ba'odim. There are three partners in a person. HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Ovi V'Imai. Bizman Sha'odim Mechabin Es Ovi V'Es Imai. When a person honors his parents, I consider it as though I lived between them, and they honored me. we know ish ve'isha zachu shchina b'nehem, and like this, if they raise a child who has kibud and who has covered avaim, kibud avaim and murder avaim, then it means they did it. They did right. They deserve to have the shchina resting between them. And so Hashem says, kibduni, they honored me by raising their son right, and the son himself is honoring, is tantamount to honoring me by honoring his parents. Further in this topic, Tanya Rebbe Omer, Goli v'yadur lefnei misha'omer v'hoya olam, it's well known and revealed before Hashem, who spoke and the world came into being, sheben mechabed es ima yosim aviv. It's more natural when it comes to kavod that a son is going to have more kavod for his mother than his father. Because she sweet talks him. Rashi says the word meshadaltim mefato, so like she convinces him to do things. She speaks more softly and gently. Therefore, lefichach hichtim HaKadosh Baruch Hu kibud av lekibud ein. Therefore, when it comes to kaved, the Torah puts the father first. In other words, you shouldn't think if the Torah had said kaved is imecha ve'asavicha, you would have said, okay, the aim, sure, I have more kaved for her. The father maybe is less important. Therefore, fakir, the Torah puts the father first to stress, don't think you have to have any less kaved for him because he doesn't sweet talk you the way your mother does. On the other hand, the Hashem also knows good and well that a son naturally fears his father more than his mother. Because the father teaches him Torah and teaches him and gives him Musar and so forth. So therefore, therefore, when it comes to murder, ish imoy v'aviv tiro, then Hashem puts the mother first. So you shouldn't think you have to have less murder for the mother than you do for the father. Which Marashah says, in other words, the Gemara is mainly stressing the point why they're not in the same order in both places. Why it is that we don't have av before aim in both places, for example. So the idea is because kibud and murder, a person naturally has those tendencies.
Rashi brings this in Chumash.
Tony Tana Kameda Rab Nachman. Then a Tana taught a Braisa in front of Rab Nachman. Bisman Shadim Mitzayrus of Avesimai. When a person troubles and pains his parents, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then Hashem says the flip side of what we said before. Yofa Sisi Shalai Dauti Benehem. It's a good thing I don't live among them. If I lived among them, they would pain me and they would harass me as well. So again, the idea is that honoring and respecting parents is a gateway to honoring and respecting Hashem. And if a person doesn't have one, then he's not really going to do the other.
Why the Mishnah doesn't state it very clearly that honoring one's parents is honoring Hashem? It's still implied, but it's not explicit.
Well, because that's, we have the equation in the Psukim, the same way as we learn many dinim from Gzera Shavas and things like that. In fact, by the way, Tosfos brings from a Yerushalmi over here that in a way Hashem is more makbid on kibud avaim more than a person's own kavod. In the sense, when it comes, what was the pasuk we quoted by kavod for Hashem? Kavod es Hashem mehoincha, from your wealth, and mehoincha is also mehoincha, from what Hashem favored you, from what Hashem gave you. So in other words, if you have money, then you're chayiv and covered of Hashem. If not, then you're potter. You're potter from many mitzvahs if you can't afford them. On the other hand, by kibud avaim, it says outright, kabod es avicha v'asimecha, whether you've got money or not. Even if you don't have money, the Yerushalmi brings a son would be responsible to go beg in order to raise money to support his parents. So we see, in a way, the covered of parents is even greater than the covered of Hashem. Okay. Since we mentioned this about Hashem dwelling among people, that when a person does kibud av v'aim, then Hashem is happy with him and says, I consider it as though I dwelt there and then they respected me, and the other way around if he doesn't. So now the Gemara digresses a little bit to talk about the Shechina of Hashem resting in this world. When a person does an Aveda in secret, and he pretends as though Hashem is not watching him, he's only afraid of boss of Adam, by doing that, it's as if he's pushing away the feet of the Shechina. Shenema, koyama Hashem Hashemayim kisiva oretz adjaim raglai. The heavens are my throne. The earth is my footstool. So now, kavyachol, like he's pushing away Hashem's feet. Tosfos brings in this connection. That would be, based on a different Gemara, that would only be if he is able to overcome his Yetzirah. And he still says, I'm going to do the Aveira anyway, even though I could overcome my Yetzirah, but I'm afraid of people, so I'm going to do it in secret. The Gemara, there's a Gemara in Chagiga that talks about where a person, Poshet, has an uncontrollable Yetzirah, where then, in a way, it's better that he does, if he's going to do the Aveira anyway, let him do it in secret, so that he's not causing a Chilul Hashem. So there's an interplay between those two points. Further in this connection, the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, a person is not allowed to walk 4 amos with an erect posture. In other words, that he stands with his head held high. The Alter Rebbe defines it in Shulchan Aruch, based on a Rambam, that it means he walks in such a way that he can't see where his feet are, where he's placing his feet. So therefore, like, he has to take little mincing steps so he doesn't trip over things or whatever. The normal way is the proper way that Rambam describes in Hilchos Deis is that a person should be walking, or he shouldn't be walking around with his head hanging either. He should be walking, looking a little downward, like the way when you see a person walking around very preoccupied with his business or whatever, he has his head tilted a little bit down. That's the way a person should be walking. So a person shouldn't be doing that he's walking b'kaimas skufa. Shenema maloi chalaretz kavoda. As the pasuk says, the entire world is full of Hashem's glory, and when he walks b'kaimas skufa, it's like he's acting as though Hashem is not in this place. In fact, there are Rishonim who don't even have the words arba amos in here, so a person is not allowed to walk any amount with kaimas skufa. Similarly, Rav Huna Bere De Reshua LeMaski Abba Amos B'Gili Arosh. Rav Huna Bere De Reshua would not walk even 4 amos. With his head uncovered, Omar, because he said Shechina l'mayla meroshi, the Shechina is above my head. So here you have, like we talked about yesterday, the machlokas we shown him. Do we mean that in that time people didn't regularly wear yarmulkes at all, and Rav Huna Bere De Reshua made a point of wearing a yarmulke, or do we mean, of course, everybody wore a yarmulke, but he made a point of wearing an extra cover, a second covering, a hat or a turban or whatever? So the machlokas we shown him on that point. Okay, getting back now to Kibud Avim. Shaul ben Almona Achas as Rebbe Eliezer, the son of a certain Almona, once asked Rebbe Eliezer, now he didn't tell Rebbe Eliezer that he's a Yosim, but he's asking him a question in Halacha. Abba Oimer Hashkeni Mayim, suppose my father says to me, I want to drink, the Ima Oimeres Hashkeni Mayim, and my mother is also asking for a drink, Ezemehem Kodem, which one comes first? Amalei, so Rabbi Eliezer tells him, Hanach kvoid imecha ba'asei kvoid avicha. Set aside for the moment the covet of your mother and do the covet of your father and serve him first. Sha'atav imcha chayim kvoid avicha, because both you and your mother are chayim in the covet of your father. The wife also has to give covet to her husband. Then Bol lifnei Rabbi Yeshua, the same Talmud came to ask Rabbi Yeshua the same question. Amalei kach, and Rabbi Yeshua gave him the same answer, that the father comes first. So he asked him, Rebbe, what happens if the wife is divorced? Then she's not chayev in the covet of her husband before. Now, why is he asking that to Rabbi Yeshua when he didn't ask that to Rabbi Eliezer? So there's an explanation that Rabbi Eliezer gave him the reason behind the halacha. So therefore, we can figure out logically that that must be the answer. If they're divorced, obviously that consideration doesn't apply. Rabbi Yeshua didn't give him that detail. He just told him the basic halacha, that the husband goes first. So therefore, that raises the question, what if the father goes first? So then that would raise the question, what if they're divorced? Omole, so Rabbi Yeshua answers him, Mibain Rise Einecha, based on your eyelashes, Nika Shaben Almona Ata, I can tell that you're the son of an Almona, because your eyelashes have fallen out, or maybe not fallen out, but like they're growing longer than usual because you're crying so much. We find it actually refers to a Gemara in Sanhedrin that mentions, for example, how Rav Gamliel was one time crying so excessively over the Churban that his eyelashes drooped over his eyes or fell out. So the same way, Rabbi Yeshua says to this Talmud, I see you the same way, so yeah. I can tell you're the son of an Almana.
So you won't have to pick it up?
No, that was Rabbi Yechanan had to pick up his eyelashes. There it's just they grew long, but yeah. Anyway, so he tells, so therefore, Rabbi Yeshua tells him, I can see, therefore, you're not asking this question as a practical Shiloh that you actually have, because you don't have both parents. You're just asking it as a question. So then in that, you're just learning it to learn Torah. So the answer is, Hatalahen Mayim Basepel. put water for them in a large large shissel where they can both drink out of, and make noises for them like chickens, like you call when you put out water for chickens, like you make noises to attract them. So in other words, the point is Rashi says the same kind of beloshen schoik. He's saying, look, you don't need to know this as practical halacha anyway. So therefore, then fine. Like he's almost like making a gleich vertel out of it. Just put out enough water, put a seifel, like Marshall says, is big enough for both to drink out of, and then call them and they can decide among themselves who gets first. One point being, in other words, why is he mentioning Dafka Katana Golem? There's a couple of interesting explanations about that. We find in the Gemara in a few places two things about Katana Golem. On the one hand, they're very promiscuous. They engage in tashmish a lot. The Gemara uses the expression that Talmid Chachamim shouldn't be with their wives Katana Golem. On the other hand, we find in the Gemara in Edovin that the Katana Golem will appease his mate before and after he has relations with her. He'll sweet talk, except of course they don't talk, but like he makes gestures in a way to show, like, I'll give you everything that I could possibly have. So there's two different explanations over here. On the one hand, Rabbi Yeshua is telling him, look, if the parents are divorced, what are they doing being in the same household, that in the first place there should be the possibility of both of them asking you to do something at the same time? They're acting like Tana Golem, then there's a problem over here. Them living in the same household when they're not married can create problems like Tana Golem. On the other hand, he also tells him they can also be like Tana Golem in the sense that Matthias, that they talk nicely to each other, and therefore they can work it out among themselves. Anyway, the final halacha in that is that the son can do whichever one he wants first in that case, if the parents are divorced. So then it's up to him. Then the choice is up to him. Gemara continues. Dorash Ula Rabba Pischa de Benesia. Ula Rabba gave the following drasha about Kibbut Avraham in front of the door of the Nasi, meaning it could mean the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, or it could mean the Reish Galusa in Babel. Anyway, the drosha was, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a pasuk in Tehillim? Yoducha Hashem kol malchei aretz, Hashem, all the kings of the world will praise you, will thank you. Ki shomu imrei ficha, when they heard, because they heard the statements of your mouth. Now my mar picha loinemo, it didn't say the statement in Lashon Yochid of your mouth, ela imrei ficha. The plural. So what does that mean? What statements in plural of Hashem did the Malchei Umos HaOlam hear that impressed them so much? So like this, B'shasha Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Noichi V'Leyelach, Hashem started saying the Aseres HaDibros, and we know they were translated into all the languages so the Goyim are able to hear them as well. So you know why Hashem is giving the Jewish people these dibris? Because he wants in his own cupboard. He wants that they should consider him their exclusive God and not worship anybody else and not take his name in vain. These are all in for the cupboard of Hashem. But then when Hashem said the mitzvah of Kibud Avraham, then they went and admitted, Yoducha Meloshin Moida, they admitted that the earlier dibris were not stam Hashem just looking out for his own cupboard, but rather that these are things that are really necessary in order for the world and for the Jewish people to function. Rava Oma Mehacha, Rava says, you have another pasuk that expresses the same point. Roish Dvorcha Emes. I'm saying in a few days by Tchiyas Shofar. So Roish Dvorcha Emes. So you got to ask, what do you mean Roish Dvorcha v'lo Sof Dvorcha? Why is David saying only the beginning of Hashem's words are true? Are the end of Hashem's words not? By the later words of Hashem, and then Kabbalah Avicha Vesimecha can be called Soif, because it's the Soif, it's the end of the first Luach, of the Gibbers on the first Luach. From that we can see, from that the Umas Olam can see, that the earlier mitzvahs on that same Luach, Anoichi and Layelacha, and the rest of them are also true, and that Hashem is not just doing them out of self-interest, but rather in order to Latsadaf Bem Sabrias, as the Medrash said, that the whole purpose of mitzvahs is in order to refine us. Maharsha says, by the way, a cute vote on it. He says the word Imre Ficha, the word Imre can also be related to the word Imra, which means the hem of a garment. So, like, so to speak, the Dibra of Kabbid is that it's the fifth one on the Luach. So it's like at the hem, it's at the bottom of that Luach. And we're saying that the Goyim realized from that what the Dibra is all about. Okay. How far does Kibud Avraham go? How much do you have to be willing to set aside for the purpose of to lose for the purpose of kibud avein? So he tells them, Sur Uma also Ubikov Mechod Ba'ashkelon, the Dom ben Nesina Shmoy. Go look at what a certain guy in Ashkelon by the name of Dom ben Nesina did. Pam Achas Bikshu Chachamim Prakmati B'Shishim Ribo Skar. One time the Chachamim wanted to buy something from him where he would make a profit of 600,000 gold dinar on it. V'yimafteach Munach Tachas Menashoytsev Shalaviv. The key was under his father's pillow. V'leitzir, and he didn't bother him. He didn't go wake him up. There's also the explanation that's brought from Tosfos, brings from the Yerushalmi, that the father's feet were on top of the box, so he couldn't just break open the box, because then also he'd be disturbing his father. An interesting point, though, that they make is, wouldn't the father have been happy that they should make such an enormous profit? Wouldn't they have been happy to be woken up? And al pi halacha, maybe you would be allowed to in that case. Rav Moshe Feinstein talks about that maybe the Gemara is going to mention, we're going to talk about soon, about Dom ben Nesina's mother was crazy. Maybe his father was also crazy. So therefore, he wouldn't appreciate the money, but he would object to being woken up. No, he didn't know. The Gemara didn't say that. No. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Shalavas Rabbi Eliezer Ad Heichem Kibud Avim. Again, how far does Kibud Avim go? So Rabbi Eliezer tells them a similar story. Amar Lahem Tzur with more details. Tzur Umasa Oved Kachav Mecha Ba'Aviv Ba'Ashkelon V'Dam Ben Nesin Shmoy. Bikshu Mimena Chachamim Avonim La'Efoid B'Shishim Ribei Skar. The Chachamim were looking to buy stones from him for the Efoid and he would have made a profit of 600,000 gold dinar on it. The Yerushalmi says specifically what it was is they lost the Yoshve stone from the Choshen. The stone on the Choshen, the Yoshve, which is the stone of Shevet Binyamin, had gotten lost and they needed a replacement. So they went to him and they were ready to buy one with a profit of 600,000 gold dinar. Rav Kahana Masni B'Shmonim Ribay. Rav Kahana learns that it wasn't 600,000, it was 800,000 profit he would have made. And of course, it could be both. When he said, I won't want to sell it to you, maybe they upped the price. The key was under his father's pillow, and he didn't wake him up. The next year, Hashem paid back Dom ben Nesina his reward. Parah Aduma was born in his herd, and now that's also worth an enormous amount of money. So the Chachmei Yisrael came to him to arrange to buy it. He says, I know how important the Parah Aduma is for you Jews. I know that if I could ask all the money in the world and you would give it to me because I have something that you can't get anywhere else. All I'm asking for is the money that I lost because of Kibud Avein. Why Taka was a schar and this with Parah Aduma? So one point that's made actually is Kibud Avim is a very sichliistic mitzvah, and Dom ben Nesina is keeping it to perfection. But does he have the same mesiras nefesh for a mitzvah that is for a mitzvah like l'mayim tam b'das? Parah Aduma is the quintessential choik. That already he wants money for, and yet the Jewish people are still willing to pay a huge amount of money for that. Showing, in other words, the mila of us Jewish people that we understand that the chukim are just as important as the mishpatim. Where Dom ben Nesina didn't understand that concept. And Meshach Chochma, by the way, makes an interesting point. Why Davka did it happen with the Yoshveh stone? He says because Binyamin had more Kibud Avim than the other brothers. The other brothers sold Yosef. Yosef himself didn't tell Yaakov all the years Binyamin had the greater Kibud Avim than all the other brothers. Therefore, he deserves that his stone is the one that featured in the story of Kibud Avim. So the Omer of Chanina, so now Rab Chanina says, you can learn from this. Somebody like Dom ben Nesina, who's not actually commanded on Kibud Avim, it's not one of those Sheva mitzvahs. He's doing it because it's a sichliistic thing. And Kach, Hashem gives him such an enormous reward. How much more so when a person is commanded, a yid who's commanded to do mitzvahs, how great a schar he can look forward to that Hashem will give him. As in fact, Rab Chanina says that someone who's commanded and does a mitzvah is greater than someone who does the mitzvah without being commanded. Why should that be? What's the logic? Tosfos says when a person is mitzvah v'oisa, he's more concerned about he might be over on it. When he's not mitzvah v'oisa, okay, I'm going to do it. But if I don't do it, big deal. I'm not so worried about it. So therefore, there's the greater schar. And then in Chassidus, there's the idea that when he's ain mitzvah v'oisa, so he's doing it for koyach atzma. So how far can koyach atzma go? A person is a baal gvul. Whereas when a person is mitzvah v'oisa, then he's doing it because the Eivish, the guilty baal gvul, told him. So therefore, that reaches a lot further. That's why Avram didn't do a bris until he was mitzvah. Yeah. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, Amar Rabbi Yosef. Now Rabbi Yosef was blind. Meiresh, he says, originally, before I heard the statement of Rabbi Chanina, Havamina, I used to think, Manda have omali halacha could have Yehuda drama summa potim and mitzvahs. If someone were to tell me that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, who holds in the Gemara and Baba Kama, which we'll get to in a few months, Bez Hashem, that a blind person Rabbi Yehuda holds is potter from mitzvahs, and he learns it from Sukkim over there. So Rabbi Yosef says, originally I thought if that turns out to be the case, Avidna Yoma Tovel Rabbanan, I would make a Suda to celebrate with the Chachamim, the Holy Mifkanina Vaha Avidna, because I would say that's a great thing. In other words, I see that I have the Mila, even though I'm not commanded to do mitzvahs, I do them anyway. Now that I heard what Rav Chanina has to say, that just the opposite, the mitzvah v'oisa is greater. On the contrary, if someone comes and confirms to me that halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, but rather like the Chachamim, that a blind person is just as much as Kayev Mitzvahs and anybody else, then Avidna Yom Tovah L'Rabbanan, then I will make a Yom Tov of Suda for the Chachamim to celebrate the fact that I have the advantage of mitzvah v'oisa. Tosfos, by the way, brings an interesting side point from this. We talked about the other day, when it comes to mitzvah esa shazman groma, which women are potter from, can they make a bracha on it or not? Now you have Sfardish Poskim, the Rif, the Rambam that hold that not. It would be bracha levatola. If they're not commanded, how can they say the bracha? Tosfos says, you consider over here, Rabbi Yosef is saying he would have been happy originally to be, before he heard Rabbi Chanina's statement, to be told he's potter from mitzvahs and is doing them anyway. Wouldn't he be upset that he's losing out on all the brachas? You see from that even somebody who's not commanded to do the mitzvahs can still say the bracha on them. So Tosfos uses that as a proof that women can say brachas on such mitzvahs. Lamaisa, it ends up being a difference between Ashkenazim and Sfardim. So when you go on Mitzvah Shofar in a few days, or Mitzvah Lulav a couple of weeks after that, then whether if you're doing for a woman, whether she's going to say a bracha or not is going to depend on whether she's an Ashkenazi or a Sfardim. He also of Dimi Yomer, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, here's another detail about what Dama ben Nisina did as far as Kibud Av V'Em. One time he was wearing a sirkoin with gold. So Rashi explains that sirkoin is a silk garment, an expensive silk garment. Shel zahav means it was woven with golden threads. While Yoshib ben Gdolei Roimi, he was sitting among the great nobles of Rome. His mother came and ripped it off him, the clothing. Tosfos brings that she had gone crazy. The tough chalay al roisha, and she hit him on the head. The yokalay b'fana, but she spit in his face. And even with all of that, he didn't embarrass her. The Yerushalmi on this Mishnah tells the story as well and adds her slipper fell off while she was hitting him with it. And instead of taking the slipper and throwing it away or something, he very gently handed it back to her. The Yerushalmi also mentions for Tagoyish a cup. There was a stone that his father would always sit on. So Dama would never sit on it out of respect for his father. When his father died, he took the stone and made it into a getchka for himself. So that's the Goyish way of honoring his father. The Gemara continues. Tonya Vimi Breid Rababahu. Yesh machel oviv pisyoni. There can be an example of a person who feeds his father pisyoni, which is a very fat, juicy kind of bird. It's related to the slav that the Jews had in the Midbar. And you would think that's a great thing. Him in an olam, but he causes himself to be driven out of the world because he does it in a way that insults his father. On the other hand, you can have a person who makes his father work turning millstones, but he brings himself into Chaya El Rabbah, and he gets a tremendous schar. Both Rashi and Tosfos bring the scenarios that with the Pisyoni, there was once a son who was doing that. He's feeding his father the best foods. And one time his father asked him, where are you affording all this? It costs a lot of money. And the son basically says, shut up and eat. Just eat like the way dogs do. So he's giving him rich food, but he's insulting him. On the other hand, the Matrina Berachayim, the vote was there was a family where the son is turning the millstones to grind wheat for the family. One day they get a notice that the father has been called up to serve the king to grind wheat for him. So the son says, "I'll go instead of you, and you stay behind here and do our family millstones, because the work for the king is going to be a lot harder. They may beat you, they may insult you, they may do various other things. So I can handle it better than you." So he's causing his father to turn a millstone at home, which is hard work, but he's mevi'a l'chayil ha'mabak, he's doing it out of respect for his father, because the least worst alternative. So the Gemara continues, Omer Ababohu, kegoin avimi bri. Let me give you the example of my son Avimi, ki mitzvah's kibbud. He's really being mekayim, the mitzvah of kibbud avim, in a tremendous way. What happened? Chamisha boni samchi havi avimi b'chaye avim. Avimi himself had five sons that were samchi while his father was alive. Samchi means that they had smicha. So they're already adults, and they're already of the caliber even to have smicha. So Avimi himself is a chosh of a person. Another point, Marashah says, samchi can also mean they were samuch al shochane. They're dependent on him for their parnasa. So you could easily ask when his father, Rabba Bohu, needs something, could ask one of them to do it. Anyway, when Rabba Bohu would come for a visit, the Kori Abava, and he would call by the door, Rohit V'Ozel, Posachle, Avimi himself would run to go and open the door for Omar, and while he's running, he would say, Ain, yes, yes, meaning it was, I'm coming, Ad-Dematori, until he actually got there. One point is, Ben Yehoyada says he wanted to make it clear to everybody that he's running the covered his father, so therefore he would say Ain very loudly that everybody else should hear that he's going to do that, so they should learn from him to also have Kibbud Av of that caliber. Then the Gemara continues, one time Rabbi Bohu asked Avimi to get him a drink of water. By the time Avimi got back with the water, and you know, remember, it wasn't just going over the sink and turning a faucet involved, yeah. So by the time he got back, Nimnem Rabbi Bohu had fallen asleep. Gochin Koyale, Avimi stood there bent over his father with the water ad the itar until he woke up. Okay, this way his father shouldn't even have to wait a fraction of a second to get what he wanted. So Hashem helped Avimi. He had a zchus. The Dorash Avimi Mizmor LaOsaf. He was able to darish in the capital Mizmor LaOsaf. He was able to darish in it in a way that he didn't understand until now. Rashi and Tosfos say we're referring to capital Ayin Tes of Tilling. And Rashi brings one explanation as it means Poshet the whole capital. He didn't fully understand it before. Now he understood it. Then Rashi and Tosfos both bring that it was specifically the beginning of the capital. Mizmor la'osef alakim bo goy menachasecha. Why Mizmor? It's talking about the Churban. It should be Kino la'osef or something. And you have the famous explanation that Hashem took out his anger, kavyocha, on the wooden stones of the Beis Mikdash rather than on the Jewish people. So he realized that point that he never realized before. Tosfos brings another point as well, that we have Tovu Ba'aretz Sha'areh, the gates of the Beis Mikdash sank into the ground. Osef, who's descended from Korach, is very happy about that, and it brings a mashal to the point of the nimshal being that once Hashem is schlepping the gates out of the ground, then he'll also schlep Korach and the rest of that group out of the ground as well, and therefore Osef is singing a mizmer about that. So now Avimi chapzich of that point that he never realized before, that was in the schus of honoring his father. With that said, Pnei Yeshua has a very interesting explanation that the capital Mizmor LaOsef actually refers not so much to capital Ayin Tes, but capital Ayin Gimel, which talks about why are we in Golos Edom so long? And then he realized, because of the tremendous Kibbud Av V'Em that Esav had for his father, so that schus lasts his generation, that's his descendants for many, many generations. The same way, now that he did a huge amount of Kibbud Av, and the Eibush to help him understand that point that he never understood before. So the Gemara continues, Omele Rav Yaakov bar Avua la'abaya. Kigoin anna. So Rav Yaakov bar Avua asks, what about a case like me? The Abda asina mevei Rav, when I come home from the yeshiva, Abba madli li kosa, my father picks up a cup to give me a drink, the imam mazgali, and my father picks up the cup, the imam mazgali, and my mother pours and mixes the wine with the water. Hey Chieben, what should I do? It doesn't seem to be derech eretz. My parents should be serving me. Omalei, Sabai tells him, You can accept that service from your mother, but not for your father, not from your father. The kivin de bar toda who? Your father himself is a ben toda. He himself is a tamen chacham. Kol shadaite, he may feel bad if you accept that service from him, and therefore, so that you shouldn't do. But your mother, who's not a tamen chacham anyway, that if she feels that's more bekavedik for her to serve you a tamen chacham, then go ahead. He's not taking away. When he had to come, when he came home, for whatever reason. No, his father is not taking away from his home. His father is home right now. So when the son comes home, his parents are there to greet him, and they're giving him a drink. He must be hot and tired after coming from the Beis Medrash. But so Abaye is telling him, no, the fact is, your father is a Talmid Chacham, and therefore you shouldn't be accepting such personal service from him. Because he himself would feel bad about that, after all, he's a Talmid Chacham. It should be beneath his dignity, really, to be doing that. He's doing it only out of because you yourself are a Talmid Chacham, but better you should refuse that. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with more stories and more dinim about Kibbutz Avraham.